You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Not really. It's Lance, it's Dell, and it's Roosh Williams. We're joined by Roosh Williams. And Roosh, you joined us previously. You got the background in basketball. I know you're a huge Rocket fan, a huge NBA supporter, but also an analyst. Talk about all the ventures you have going on right now from an NBA standpoint. What from a podcast standpoint you're writing, anything that you're doing.
Yeah, man. First of all, thanks for having me back. Glad to be back. If you are on Twitter at all, you may or may not have seen me. Lately, I've been tweeting a lot, especially with the playoffs going on. You can follow me at Roosh Williams, R-O-O-S-H Williams. I host a podcast for Ball is Life. If you're not familiar with Ball is Life, check it out. It's called The Noble and Roosh Show. You can get it anywhere you get your podcast.
They feature it on Ball's Life. Like, you see it. They headline it there on the website.
Absolutely. No, I mean, we are in association with Ball is Life. We do a lot of cool stuff, man. We interview players. We interview journalists. Sometimes we interview, you know, people that don't have anything to do with basketball, like Diamond Dallas Page. But we've done shows with Andrew Bogut. We've done shows with Danny Manning, Taylor Rooks, you know, the cool Robert Covington of the Rockets. So a ton of people. So definitely check that out. Follow me. If you listen to podcasts, go check it out. And if you want to keep up with NBA commentary, like I said, just follow my Twitter timeline because it's all popping off.
Let's talk about I want to talk about, before I get to NBA playoffs, you talked about Ball is Life. I've been in a Ball is Life YouTube rabbit hole fairly recently. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was on it. And it's with the Ball is Life basketball teams. What they do is they come in, they've got an East Coast, a West Coast. I don't know how many different teams they have. A lot of these guys are former, like, D3 basketball players, some D2. One guy, Dell, you remember this guy who's got half an arm? And he played at Florida as a walk-on. He's on one of the teams. The dude can ball with literally, I'm not talking about Shaquem Griffin with no hand. I'm talking about
at the elbow,
a little below the elbow, I think, okay. Right there at about the elbow, and he can ball. They go to playgrounds and they go to some rough ass playgrounds. Now, they're not just going to okie doke spots. Some of these, and I'm thrown back into my, like, I played at some just YMCA's that were no big deal, but I have played at some playgrounds where you realize, whoo, man, this is these are some pickup games that get serious. And you got to be strong-willed because they will test you just by just the talking, and not just the guys on the court, but the guys off the court. Are you a pickup basketball guy?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's what I love to do, obviously, especially as I've gotten older and more washed, which I completely embrace. But but look, man, I mean, the games that they play, it kind of reminds me of, you remember the And One?
Yeah.
Like I remember coming home from school and I'd see the And One mixtape, and they would just pull up to a playground. Everyone comes out. Hoops, and then, you know, the best of the best kind of emerge from that. And I live in LA, so I've seen some of that atmosphere, that type of basketball game, like closer to the beach, that, you know, that stereotypical type stuff. And there's really nothing like it. I mean, these days I just play like at an LA Fitness, or if we're keeping it real, I like to rent out a gym and keep it private because too many people get a little nasty on the court.
Damn, that's what's up. If you can rent out a gym and play.
It's not that expensive. You can
it's
do
not?
There's tons of places, man. You could do like, I think it's like 20, 25 an hour. You get a 10, 15 person game going to rotate and stuff.
Really?
It ends up not being
Like at a church or something? Or
No, there's like, they're like recreational basketball gyms specifically for that purpose where you rent them out. I did one the other day.
Hold on, they got rec gyms specifically just for rentals?
Yeah.
Do they provide medical personnel for people like Lance?
No. Back in the day, I used to never get hurt. Now it's like, no. Me and my guys that we used to, well, I used to skip class. They would actually go to class at Tulane. I might go, might not. But all we did was run like 3 hours a day, four if we were really holding the court. I live for it. You get so excited sometimes you would run because you don't want to miss. If you know runs are going on, there's that excitement level. And we were talking about getting together our whole group again in Vegas sometime and going to golfing and maybe playing basketball. And I think everyone realized, let's just golf. Because I already know if I go laterally, I already know something bad is going to happen if I try to really go hard. And so I don't even want to mess with it. Well, but it's the playground. Like, I was swept back into the loudmouth guy that calls all the fouls or is always fouling. You see these types. If you played pickup ball or you play them, go watch some of the Ball is Life videos of these Ball is Life teams going to the courts because they show the whole game. They cut it up into just every shot, basically. But, man, every type of pickup basketball, and I think Shea Serrano may have written an article. No, somebody else wrote an article one time about it. If you're in that culture, which I used to be, there is definitely subculture of the pickup game.
Dude, it's incredible. I mean, I tweeted this the other day. You know,
Dell wouldn't know because he's not allowed to be around people for more than an hour.
It's not about being allowed. As I choose not to be around
people. It's your
people.
Choice. I get it.
It's my body, my pickup, my choice.
But, no, I mean, like a lot of times, dude, I go to the gym with the intention of lifting weights or working out. I see the basketball court. You'll see, like, maybe three or four people shooting.
Sirens call.
You know, you're like, I'll shoot around.
Siren
Get a couple shots up. Three more people come in. Hey, you want to play fours? And then boom, before you know it, you're playing full court for 2 hours, may or may not have gotten in a fight or three, you know, and then you go home with ankles like jello.
So. It just goes like that. Do NBA or certain regular season NBA games, I found myself being reminded this year, maybe more than ever, that some of them look like pickup games, like especially later in the year, the last 10 to 12 games, it was so sloppy, so disjointed. The efforts level was like, you know, like the runs had been going on for 2 or 3 hours and you could see the energy was starting to fade on the court from a pickup game. That's what it looked like on NBA courts. I felt it looked like nothing more than higher level pickup games.
And a lot of people want to blame that on like the shortened season. And
LeBron has blamed some of that
on. LeBron is. I give some deference to that, especially because, I mean, they went all the way and they won it all, so he had the least amount of time to recover. But at the same time,
what's the Kings' excuse? they didn't get to a conference final. They didn't even make the playoffs. They weren't even in the play-in. So, sure, LeBron, you're very injured. Get it. The Heat, as I'm a fan, I know. They suffered, and they weren't the same team. Bubble frauds, whatever you want to call it. But most of the league had a lot of time off from before the bubble came back. And other teams just didn't come back because they didn't make the play. They weren't even in contention for a play-in.
They had the most time off ever.
Yeah, the Hawks, some people. Oh, now Nate McMillan changed that whole team, but some people are pointing to the Hawks as a team. You know what? Maybe some having all that time off helped them. It hurt the Final Four. I'll say that. You can look at their injuries and what happened, but for a lot of the league is like, I don't buy it.
I mean, if you look at the people that got hurt, the only one that is abnormal in terms of their injury history is James Harden.
Yeah.
LeBron. Well, LeBron played. AD, he gets hurt a lot.
A lot.
Kyrie gets hurt a lot. Who else?
I mean, Jalen Brown missed the last Kemba. Part of the year.
Kemba's
had an issue, a nagging injury that had nothing to do with a shortened.
But injured players, guys with injury histories, tend to stay injured once it happens in their season.
Embiid
is right. Yeah.
He's playing through it, but
good point. Embiid is one of those guys. So James is kind of the new.
Maybe you point to Jamal Murray. I don't know.
No, that was one that that was a new. But that happened. So LeBron basically came out and said, they all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game. These injuries aren't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest. Rest before.
REM? He's talking about sleep cycles.
That means.
Is that what he's talking about?
Before starting back up, 8, possibly 9 All-Stars missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of year for our league, and fans are missing, but fans missing a ton of our favorite players. It's insane. If there's one person that know about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. Yada, yada, yada. The NBA came out and said, actually, excuse me. NBA spokesman Mike Bass said injury rates were virtually the same this season and they were in 19 and 20, while starter level and all-star players missed games due to injury at similar rates as the last three seasons. I think it's when and the name of those players. So maybe LeBron could point to, we'll look at it happening at the end of the year. Some of it's just bad luck and just coincidence. Sometimes that can just happen.
The bigger thing is LeBron decided on the day where we heard about Chris Paul having COVID. We heard about Kawhi, a knee injury, all the coaches getting fired. You go, you guys aren't talking about me. So let me interject myself into the conversation. No one's looking for you right now. Understand, you have been carrying the NBA for, well, since you entered the league, but really the last decade or so, but it's not about you right now.
I mean, LeBron is one of the greatest players of all time, but I completely agree with Dell. It just reeks of needing attention, directing the conversation back towards him. Kawhi Leonard's another name, by the way, that you mentioned, superstars with injury history that are sitting out. And it's just like, come on, LeBron, this is not about you. For once in a while, you didn't make the finals. You got bounced.
I don't know why he has to make sure that he's
part of his DNA. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's part of who he is.
Yeah, I don't.
And that's why Michael Jordan is my GOAT, for the record.
Yeah. Well, we all have the same. I think we have the same GOAT. I know you don't, because he left the Miami team.
Don't Gary come at Payton me. Is my GOAT.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay.
Look, my favorite player is Dwayne Wade. I wouldn't call him the GOAT, but he is my dude because of the team he played on. Yeah. But understood, Trey, if you like Gary Payton.
Is GP your favorite player, or is he your GOAT?
He's both.
Okay.
The glove.
Fair enough. Fair enough. When we come back, we'll get into NBA playoffs.
You place Rocket fans in a category, A, B, and C. Yeah, ask Bruce what category he's in.
Yeah, and I guessed what your category was.
Hit me.
There's a category when we come back. I think Rocket fans are in a particular category with James Harden. I'll reset that, and I won't tell you what I guessed with you, but we'll see which category you're in. It's 10:15 here on the bench.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, the Atlanta Hawks are trying to finish off the Sixers. Nate McMillan going to get a full-time gig out of this? The interim coach for the Hawks?
If he doesn't, I mean,
I'd be shocked.
I don't know why they wouldn't. Also, sucks that the Rockets were not able to secure him as an assistant. If you remember, in the offseason, he was in the talks. But I think he went to Atlanta specifically because he saw a situation where exactly what's happened could have happened. You know, Lloyd Pierce fizzling out, he takes over, and I mean, I think he's a pretty damn good coach. He was in Indiana. He knows how to turn teams around. He's never taken a team all the way, but he's really good at making a team very competitive at like the 3-5 seed, and that's exactly what Atlanta is.
That is exactly what they probably are. Maybe they could be more in the future. Do you guys think Steven Silas regrets, now that what's happened in Dallas has happened? You couldn't see that coming, but now that all that stuff is happening, Steven Silas could be over there. Or do you think maybe secretly he thinks this Houston situation isn't as bad as it looks on paper right now, because you do have a good chance of getting a lottery pick this year? You got several picks coming?
I think it depends. So I think it depends, because Houston right now has some organizational structure, right? Mm-hmm. It took a second, but now we know Rafael Stone is the GM. We know that, you know, they're supporting Silas internally. You know, Tillman has been vocal about supporting Silas. Mark Cuban just fired Don Nelson, and Rick Carlisle just tendered his resignation. So there's like some organizational unrest, in my opinion. So from that aspect and perspective, like, maybe Silas feels more comfortable, but it's just kind of hard to pass up coaching a guy like Luka Doncic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. Although it does look a little, what's going on in Dallas, we talked about it a little bit, Dell and I. It's
like an Easter.
It's
a situation.
It's a weird situation with Volgalis. Is that his name?
Bob Volgaris.
Volgaris.
Volgaris. Okay.
Bob Which Volgaris. Is also interestingly the man, the many faced god. I think that was his name too.
Yeah, it's like an Easter Bee situation. I mean, you have this executive that's been brought
in. It's Valamergulis, which was their...
Similar, though.
Yes.
Similar. It is an Easter Bee. I didn't think about that, but it is kind of a similar situation. And maybe Luka's the Deshaun.
You know, Luka, I mean, it's exactly the situation. The only difference is that Luka has not yet demanded a trade. He could. I mean, you got to think they're stuck with that Porzingis contract. They might not be able to trade it, or if they do trade it, they got to sell it, right? So they got to attach assets to dump it. And then you got to think, how is that going to domino effect in terms of building around Luka? So Luka could ask out. The other difference is that there's no, you know, like Mark Cuban calls the shots, whereas Cal McNair tucks his tail, right? So those are the two types of differences, but I mean, it's very similar. You got this random executive brought in. People don't know exactly why he's kind of overtaken things. Bob Volgaris was like a gambling expert, and he's like their quantitative and research data analysis guy, and all of a sudden he's calling all the shots over Donnie Nelson.
Well, if Lucas signs that extension, and then before it even you know goes into effect, he asks for a trade, then it's exactly like the Texans, because that's what happened with Deshaun.
Well, that's right. But the article said he basically told Volgaris or whatever his name. What is he? Say it again.
Bob Volgaris.
Volgaris. He told Volgaris to shut the F up, ooh, basically, about when he told him to calm down. He said, I'm not going to calm down. You know, you're not going to tell me what to calm down. You're going to tell me what to do. Something like that. Yeah, That's why.
It was during the middle of a game.
Yeah.
And then Luka took offense to Volgaris leaving early during a Mavs loss. He said, oh, you're just quitting on the team. They have a personality conflict where Volgaris now no longer sits courtside because Luka doesn't want to look at him. So that's where they are. Now, you, like I said before we went to break,
yep,
you early in the show, you put Rockets fans in a category that it's an A and a B and a C.
I think there's an A, B, and C. Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think I put Roosh in a category, didn't I?
Yes. You, okay. Yes.
I put him
you
in
profiled
A.
Him even.
I profiled you. Yeah, it happens. I profiled you as an A. So here's the thing. I said there are three. You tell me if you think this is not accurate, or maybe you tighten this up if you think I've got it off a little bit, because you do a lot of Rocket podcast stuff and I think you maybe have a better feel. I think there are A, the fans who are happy for what James did as a Houston Rocket and they actually are cheering for him to win a title. There's no hard feelings and everything's fine. There is B, the fans who are unhappy with how things went down. Maybe they had issues with James in the playoffs. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it was more recent with the way he got out of town. But they are definitely looking forward to him losing. And if he chokes or plays poorly in a game seven, so be it. But they want James. They absolutely don't want him to get a championship ring, now or ever. Or the C, where, you know, they were James fans before. Maybe they got ticked off at him before, but they don't care if he wins it. They don't care if he loses it. Out of sight, out of mind. They don't really care about James anymore. Now, I put you in a category.
Okay.
I said you'd be A.
Really?
You might be C.
I'm C.
Okay. So I didn't think you were B.
And
I'm B.
You're B? So you're against? So
I appreciate all the stuff, but I don't like the way that James, because I think James put my team in a bad situation with, now so did Daryl, because he placated James.
Yeah.
It's Daryl's fault. It's Tillman's fault. It's Tad's fault. It's Les Alexander's fault. But they did. But James wanting to get everyone kicked out, the Chris Paul thing was the last straw because that put the Rockets in a bad spot.
Right. And I mean, as time goes on, I don't drift into B, but I get a little bit of B. I think your tiers are almost entirely accurate, except I would lump in to C the people that, you know, basically this is where I'm at. And I would lump this into C. I'm happy for his time in Houston. He put us on the map. We should have had a title. I'm also very not happy about how he chose to exit, and I'm just kind of neutral. It's like when I watch him, I'm just like, yeah, that's what he does. You know, I'm not pumping my fist and going, yes, hard.
You think most people are C? Where do you think most people fall?
I think it's really split. There's B is, I think B is the smallest category,
okay,
but the loudest category.
Okay.
You know, the people that hate him. But I think most people are just like, whatever.
What if I position it this way, that James failing in Brooklyn helps the Rockets' future?
That is also where I'm at. So, like, my dad asked, I'm watching the game last night because I don't like Giannis. And I would.
No, why?
I don't like his game. He's just not a hooper to me. He's just a big dude. I mean, if the refs would not give him deference when he charges up and runs full speed and dips his shoulder, his game would be a lot different.
Who is he? Can you comp him? I'm in NFL draft stuff, so I always have to come up with comps. Giannis is super hard for me to comp because he's big and strong. He's got elite physical traits. He's not skilled.
It's like,
who is he?
Maybe this is a bad comp, but it's like Tebow's one, but maybe a Roy Williams at safety. He wasn't a cover safety. He just trucked you, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And Giannis isn't like a skillful guy. He can't take you. We see what happens when he goes one-on-one. It honestly looks kind of sad, but he can truck you. And when he trucks you, He'll do that little pivot, spin, and sometimes it goes in, or he just gets the call. And that's his game, right?
Giannis is a freakish center that if he actually developed a back... If he, like,
but guys, he's a two-time MVP, though.
He's a dominant...
Yes, he's, so
a,
dom- he,
he's right? a dominant force that if he decided, you know what, I'm not a perimeter player. Sure, I have speed, I have quickness and advantages over centers, but if they're going to put Jeff Green on me, I'm going to punish him in the post every time. Like, the fadeaway against James speaks volumes when he had James in a post. But we know James, a good post defender. I've heard it a million times. I understand. But if he decided, you know what, I'm a really athletic center, and no one who they put on that's smaller than me can guard me down there. Because the Bucks at their best, when their offense is going, they were dumping the ball down to Giannis against Jeff Green, and he would sometimes put him under the rim. Other times he wouldn't. I don't know what he can be, because he's not going to develop an ability to shoot, I don't know, a 12-foot jumper.
Touch.
He can't do that, so I don't know what he can be other than the guy that you try to make a back-to-the-basket guy. What's he most efficient at in the half court?
So this is what I was saying last night, because I don't think he's not a back-to-the-basket guy
not,
at all.
No, he's not.
And that move on James is like the epitome illustration of the fact that he's not that, right? What he is lethal in transition, so the Bucks have to figure out how to stay in transition, which obviously is out of their control. But what I would do is I would take Holiday or Middleton, I'd put him on the elbow at the three, you run a pick-and-roll, figure out some way to get into the paint, right? Get your guy to penetrate when you stick Giannis in the opposite corner and you use him off the ball. He's lethal when he's running at full speed. He can catch and finish. That's what he's best at. He's so long. He's so athletic. You just got to – it's almost like Russ, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember, we'd have plays where we'd have Harden doing exactly what I said. On one elbow, he gets past his guy, goes to the hoop. Russ is in the corner. If that dude helps, you remember those alley-oops where Russ just crashes and you'd catch it with one hand and finish? There's one in Utah from like the fans' perspective where you see, but that's the type of play. You catch him in transition, you get him moving so that he doesn't have to do anything.
That's why you don't like him.
I was thinking, mentioned it, and you know, you say Clint Capella and you say Giannis. It's okay, you're insulting Giannis a little bit, but what was Clint Capella best at in the pick and roll?
Yeah, crashing the rim, catching and finishing.
Yeah, Giannis would be, obviously we're picking apart this guy's game when he still is going for 30-plus in these games, but you can see the awkwardness in the half court, and what is the playoffs? Half court. And when the Bucks got in transition, you saw his effect. You mentioned the deference to him, those big steps and the shoulders. He got those calls, got to the foul line, and actually wasn't bad in that second half shooting free throws. But it's just like, watching that Bucks team in the half court, when your best player has to get touches and he has no idea what to do offensively, it can be bad, and that's why you have to depend on Chris Middleton. And depending on a mid-range jumper from him, is if they go in, it looks great. But I don't know if there's a flow. And thank God for them that Kyrie is hurt and James is hobbling, because Bud would have been out of here probably yesterday.
They would have gotten thumped. Yeah. That's the other thing. He's putting up the numbers, but they're going to Game 7 against Harden, I'm sorry, Kevin Durant and Harden on one leg.
So is there a chance, if I came up, I've been trying to think of a comp, because you have to find somebody who's accomplished but is kind of bulky and clunky in terms of skill level. And it's really hard to think of that, because it's hard to, I think baseball gives me a chance. I was looking at Aaron Judge and all this. What about Mark McGwire, a guy who had a very definitive physical advantage? We know steroids too, but the physical advantage, he was always a home run hitter, but he was never considered a complete player. He was a high-end player, second MVP once, fourth in MVP. He was a rookie of the year. I've never seen a player like, I agree with everything y'all said, but he is a two-time MVP, and he does put up numbers. Like,
and that's
he's
why
going to always get points and rebounds, because he knows who he is. He doesn't try to sit outside and shoot threes.
Yeah, I mean, I like that comment. That's why I don't like him, is because the standard – that he's been, that, you know, the awards he's been given, I mean, he's been touted as the best. That's what the MVP is. He won it back-to-back years, one of those years over our guy who went crazy with that 36-point-per-game season. And so that's kind of the reason, is it's like, look, you're not that guy, Giannis. I mean, you're a great number two.
The numbers say that, but...
But the eye, doesn't, you watch the
but
game.
No one is going to call him the best player in the world, ever. I don't think anyone will ever call him that.
Right, and you see, I mean, you can see the lack of respect he gets from his peers. Like you said, it's awkward. Like Dell said, it's awkward in the half court. And that's because no one respects his game. They just back up 7-8 feet.
It's a disrespectful. What Blake Griffin does to Giannis, it's disrespectful.
Yes.
And it's the best way to defend him. Being disrespectful, say, like, go ahead. If you just
try to challenge his ego, but he didn't bite yesterday.
Which is when they're at their best. If they get stops and get out in the open court, that guy is a force. We all know. But half court, half court game, it's an ugly thing. And you know, it's another ugly thing. Jrue Holiday shooting open jumpers right now. Mm-hmm. That guy who was supposed to be brought in to put them over the top, because you know, watching Eric Bledsoe play in the playoffs had to be sickening for Bucks fans. They brought in Jrue Holiday to be that added piece, and he's not been good from the perimeter. So they have a couple issues, and like Rusha, this is why they're in a game seven against a team that's nowhere near full strength.
Rusha, Longhorn, right?
That's right.
Okay, you're a Longhorn football fan?
Yes.
You a college football fan?
Lately, it's been hard because the Longhorns suck, but generally, yes.
Okay, I got a question for y'all. It involves something one of my sons brought up to me through his Instagram sports stuff, since he knows everything about sports through Instagram. He had one of those Instagram posts that came out, and I said, this is interesting. Send it to me. I want to bring it up on the show. So we'll do that. It involves Heisman trophies when we come back. And it's 10:32.
And once again, we have one more pair of tickets to the
Pancreas.
We're going to use a different word.
Oh, okay.
To the Charlo fight tomorrow at Toyota Center. So stay tuned for that. And we'll come up with the magic word that you'll hear during the middle of the segment that we'll randomly crowbar into your Texas Longhorn football talk.
All right, we'll do that. 10:33 here on the bench.
Answer that. To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
I sit alone in my four-cornered room, staring at candles. Whatever this is on, let me drop some bits like this here. At night I can't sleep, I toss and turn, candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
This Saturday, June 19th, Houston's hometown, I pretend like that's not tomorrow, Houston's hometown undefeated WBC middleweight champion, world champion Jamal Charlo takes on hard-hitting Juan Macias Montiel live from Toyota Center. So not right now, and we're not going to do the magic word because it kind of takes out the people who listen to it on the stream and Trey's most hated constituency, Twitch.
But, they don't hate me.
No, you hate them is what I mean.
I don't hate them either. I'm just hangry.
Yeah, okay.
I don't hate poor Marine. I think he's a good man.
You never met him. You don't know if he's a good man or not.
Yeah. He served his country.
That doesn't make you...
That's his name. You don't know even know if
you don't even know if he did that or not.
He may play... it may be from a video game or something.
He may be poor Marine on Call of Duty. We don't know.
The man served his country.
You don't have proof of that. Did he send you the dog tags?
No.
Let's go... At 10:40, caller 15 wins a pair of tickets to the Charlo Montiel fight. It'll be at Toyota Center tomorrow, so tight window, but we'll get the information to you. Our intern Cam will take care of you. And if you don't win, make sure to catch all the action live and in person by getting your tickets now at toyotacenter.com or axs.com. So caller 15 at 713-780-3776 in, less than 2 minutes, 10:40.
Roosh Williams is our guest right now in studio. Big Houston sports fan, is typically works in L.A. You're in the legal profession. Formerly hip hop artist. We never really talked about that here.
Yeah, past.
I've gone back and listened to you. You had some. It's kind of a gravelly. Had a little. It wasn't an Eminem delivery from the standpoint of the sound, the quality, the tenor of the. It's more. You have more bass in your voice.
Yeah, man. It's almost feels like. A life in the past. I haven't put anything out in over half a decade, but I think 6 years. But yeah, man. I mean, when I was at it, I did. You know,
how many sports drops did you have? How many shout outs did you have?
A ton.
Yeah, heard. I heard. I wondered how frequent it was.
A ton. Yeah. I mean, I did records with Paul Wall, Killer Callion, Scarface. I don't know, Baby Bash, Devin the Dude. We did a ton of stuff.
Dude, those are Houston institutions.
Yeah.
How'd you get those spots,
man? So when you're doing what you're doing, you just got to find. It's like anything else, right? You kind of hit the ground running. You figure out the players. You figure out how to network. And then you make moves, and sometimes things fall in your lap. It's kind of a mix, you know?
Let me ask you, hip-hop to lawyer, how often do you see that?
Probably not a lot.
I don't think a lot. That's what you do now. Now, you also graduated from Texas. You are a college football fan, baseball fan. You're a sports fan. We talk a lot of basketball with you. Give me the 10, and Dell has his own college football podcast. So give me the last 10 Heisman Trophy winners.
All right, so the last one was in 2020, so I'm going to go back to 2010, and I'll start with 2010. Cam Newton, 2011, Robert Griffin III, 2012, Manziel, 2013, Jameis Winston, 2014, Marcus Mariota. 2015, Derrick Henry. 2016, Lamar Jackson. 2017, Baker Mayfield. 2018, Kyler Murray. 2019, Joseph Burrow. And 2020, Devontae Smith.
Okay.
That's cool and all, but can you name the last 20 Daytona 500 winners?
No, Dell, stop. We're not taking this to Daytona talk again.
Why do you keep calling me, calling him Dell?
I'm sorry, Trey.
I know I usually
Trey,
sit there,
yeah.
But
Trey, stop hijacking the show at Daytona talk. Let us finish this, because I'm too easily pulled off task. All right, so those are the 10. Dell, you've heard it.
Yeah.
Now, somebody on Instagram, it doesn't matter who, they ranked them. Where do you think, where would you guys put Johnny Manziel? Because this is how it came up to me. Out of that list of guys, who would you have number one?
Based off college only, correct? The season? Based off the season that he had?
Yes. This is subjective. This is your own list. So who would you say is the best of the 10? So you might, for you, it might be the best. It might have to do with wins-loss. It might have to do with statistics. Just your whole vibe for how you feel about a guy's impact on college football, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be.
There is an element, just real quick before you go, Dell, there is an element to the Heisman that is, I think, more than like the stats. Like, there's that.
Should be.
There's
yeah.
that feel of, you know, like I remember, you know, Vince Young didn't win the Heisman when Texas won it all, but I just remember that season, there's a vibe mm-hmm. to the whole thing, right? Reggie Bush, we remember it seemed like every other week there was a punt return for a touchdown or whatever. So I think it's more than stats.
It should be, to me, it should be the best player in college football. I feel like it, we know it isn't always, but I think they got it right with Devontae Smith this year. He was the best player in college football. There's
I
no
think
doubt about it.
The name you just mentioned is my guy because of what he had to do from the wide receiver position.
Devontae would be one.
A pure wide receiver to win the award hadn't happened since the 91 when Desmond won it. Mm. Now, Desmond had the punt return ability as well. I think Devontae took one back, but no one looked at him as a pure returner, partly because that was Jalen Waddle's job until he got hurt. So his ability, the build-up, for how people kind of rallied around him and said, no, we're not giving it to Mac Jones. No, we're not giving it to Kyle Trask. Let's actually give it to who we believe is the best pure football player for what had been a quarterback and running back award, really, since you just listed off all the names. If you're not named Derrick Henry or quarterback, who's winning the Heisman Trophy? Devontae kind of broke that. So I take him. And I think Johnny Manziel would be second on my list because of all the other things. He brought a program that everyone always considered, oh, well, that's cute, A&M. Well, you think you're good? Okay, cute. And he turned them into a name brand for a couple years, and particularly in that Heisman year.
They had Johnny eighth on this list. I think Johnny deserves to be higher. How do you have it, Roosh? Where would you put Manziel in, and who would you have number one?
Number one, I think I got to go Cam Newton for me. Mm. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they won it all that year, right?
They actually did. Cam is not on that list.
They didn't even put
him.
Oh,
he's not on that list?
Technically, he was 10.
So he would have been 11 back.
He was a 10, so he was. Okay, but if.
You want to throw him in there.
Let's drop it 11. That's fine. You put Cam number one?
I mean, again, I have bias here, but Cam Newton's season reminded me so closely of Vince Young in 05, yeah. right? Mm-hmm, just mm-hmm. dominated, running, passing, yeah. breaking all sorts of
records. And let's remember where Auburn was. They were a top 20 team. They weren't considered a title
contender.
Undefeated
and beat Bama.
Auburn was perennially like, you know.
And also ran. From outside of the Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown team, they're pretty much an also ran, the second team, even when Alabama was
struggling.
Who's
the most memorable Auburn player from that era after those names? Carlos Dansby?
Jason Campbell, maybe?
Oh, no.
The
gross.
Quarterback on the same team?
The most memorable name
in that era?
Name
another Auburn player.
Oh, but you mean besides those running backs?
Yeah, besides those running backs.
I mean, Quentin Groves?
Takeo Spikes, or is he even further back?
I have to look.
That's like 90s. Takeo Spikes.
Is it that long? Maybe so. Yeah. That dude has the sickest traps. His trap game is out.
If someone wants to look this up, I could be wrong. I think he was in the same draft class or the same high school class as Randy Moss, but I might be wrong.
Takeo Spikes was drafted in 98, which I think is Randy Moss's year.
Yeah, so, that's too far.
Yeah.
That's too far back.
Name another guy in that era besides the two running backs. If you're not naming Jason Campbell.
Or corners.
Think of a corner. When was Carlos Rogers?
Yeah, he would have been in that neighborhood, but I think he's mid-2000s. But no, that's a good point. Cam is.
Yeah,
so where'd you put Manziel?
Cam. So Manziel, okay, I'd go Cam. I think I'd have to go Cam, Jameis, Burrow, Manziel.
See, that's where I'm different. I got Jameis like at the back end. And maybe I'm being disrespectful to Jameis and I remember it wrong.
So what? He's a Florida State guy. Be as disrespectful as you want.
So this list that this guy had put out there, he had Jameis and Mariota ahead of Manziel. I feel like Manziel's ahead of both of those guys personally for me.
Manziel's ahead of them on like the feel factor.
Yeah, and that's probably I didn't go back and double check the stats.
He was a phenomenon.
But hey, Jameis had
Johnny was a phenomenon.
He was. But didn't they blow it to Duke that year?
No, they beat him. That was the year after where they were down big and they beat him in a Peach Bowl.
Yeah, no, the year that Johnny was actually his Heisman year was he was a sophomore.
And they capped it off redshirt freshman, I think, really, wasn't he?
Did he come out of redshirt sophomore year? I thought he won it as a redshirt sophomore.
He redshirted his first year, and then he came, and then he played and won a Heisman, and then he played a second year where they played Duke in the Peach Bowl and won. They beat Oklahoma to close out that Heisman year. Remember, they beat Alabama on the road, and yeah. They lost early to
Florida.
And
that was redshirt freshman?
It was A&M's first SEC season, and they lost to Florida in their first SEC game, and Johnny played okay, not great. And everyone was like, oh, look at this guy running around.
Johnny's Heisman year was legit.
Yeah.
I mean, he was tough.
No one really knew about him because he hadn't played any football, at least in college, and he changed A&M for like a year or two. So I would probably have Johnny 1. But I just like pure football players, so that's why I've had Devontae.
So you have Johnny that high. You have Johnny where?
I'd say
behind Cam.
Cam, yep. No, I have Cam, Jameis, Burrow, Manziel, 4.
See, I gotta have Burrow. I like Kyler's numbers and everything, but we've seen it. Him and Baker both did it, so I can't. Like, I don't. To me, Burrow and Devontae Smith for sure. Up there, I guess RG3 back in the back, and some of that is he's hurt because he wasn't a good pro player too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we kind of.
But my ranking is also
Derrick Henry. They had last. Would y'all put Derrick Henry last?
He's a big bruising fast running back. There's nothing.
How was Tebow not one?
He wasn't in the time frame. Trey, please. He wasn't in the same time frame. Derrick Henry was great, but it's like, oh, you're big and strong running past.
I think
dudes.
I might put Baker last. Just me. I think I might put Baker.
Where'd you go to college?
Texas.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I'm just checking. I'm checking that. 10:46. We'll finish up here when we come back. If you guys want to jump in, you can do so at 713-780-3776. Going to get to our Astros. Roosh, you can talk Astros baseball. You're an Astros fan.
I love the Astros.
All right, I want to wrap up with the Astros because the Astros are in the midst of a four-game set here taking place this weekend. They took game one 10-2, and we'll headline and highlight some of what's coming up this weekend in case you want to get out to an Astros game or you want to sit home and watch it. 10:46 right here on the bench.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Okay, so the Astros won yesterday 10-2. I brought up Jose Altuve. Are you aware, Roosh, that he has Roosh Williams in studio with us? Roosh, by the way, shout out your Twitter handle and your podcast real quick.
R-O-O-S-H Williams, Roosh Williams on Twitter. And if you want to listen to an NBA podcast where we host and interview college prospects, NBA players.
Do you ever
NBA
fight, journals. By the way? Y'all argue?
Sometimes, yeah. We actually argued yesterday. Not on air or not on recording.
Why not?
Because we were texting and he was just being an idiot. Uh-huh. But follow it. It's called The Noble and Roosh Show. You can get that anywhere you get your podcasts. Check it out.
All right. Hold on. Before I do anything. Now, we consider this a big family, so you're inside the family right now. So we sometimes Dell or John or me will bring up uncomfortable stuff sometimes.
Mostly
so we feel like we have to.
John.
And I feel bad because I'm kind of hitting you with it. I didn't even tell you because it just came to my head. And I am ADD and things just come out. I'm not – what is it when you just – I don't have Tourette's.
You just spurt out words.
But things will just – will come out. So – I don't know what happened here. And I'm friends with this guy and I'm friends with you, so it's not a big deal.
Okay.
And grown ass people have arguments. That's why I asked you.
Oh, I know where we're going.
Okay, good. Are you okay with it?
Yeah, let's
okay.
Go.
You want to do this? You know what happens when we bring up uncomfortable things for this
guy. I know.
You really want to do this?
This guy gets a little sick. But this is what I'm saying. You have to have thick skin in this. Me and John can have big arguments and be cool with it. But not everyone can. Some people are sensitive in radio.
And you wanna tweak it a little bit right now.
No, I don't want to tweak it. I don't know what the deal is.
Okay.
I just have heard about it just secondhand, and I didn't get any information. Now, sometimes you have disagreements with people on Twitter. I have disagreements with people all the time because they come at me about my draft stuff. As long as you keep it completely 100 and you don't get personal and you don't call me an idiot and start name calling, you can go at me all you want and we can go back and forth because that's what I do. That's what I've done is argue about sports. That's not a problem. And I don't have I won't hold a grudge against you. As a matter of fact, I'll forget about it. As long as you are respectful in the way that you do it. Now, I know at some point that you had a disagreement with one Joel Blank on Twitter, right?
That is correct.
It was a Twitter disagreement, I assume, about basketball.
That is correct, about the Houston Rockets.
Okay. So, and that's expected. Joel used to work. Was this when he was a host or when he worked for the Rockets?
I want to say this was maybe like 5 months ago.
Oh, then he was a host. He did not work for the Rockets.
No, he did not.
So what did you guys argue about on Twitter?
Okay, so I'm trying to find it. Basically, there was some type of discussion going on about Rafael Stone, okay? Joel was criticizing the hire. That's cool. Whatever. He was basically saying that Rafael Stone was an internal promotion, a cheap, quote-unquote, cheap promotion by Fertitta, you know, to kind of keep things in-house, keep his trusted guys around, save a few bucks. Maybe he's right.
He said it on Twitter or during the show?
So I think he said it on his show.
He has said it on the show. I didn't know if he said it on Twitter.
I think he said it on his show, but he was alluding to it on Twitter, and that's basically what kind of triggered him, I think. He was alluding to it on Twitter. So someone, I think, tagged, either responded to me or tagged him or something. We got looped into a Twitter thread, and he basically he referred to what he said on the show, right? He was like, oh, yeah, I said it on my show. And I responded something to the effect because, you know, I was getting the reply to my Twitter handle. And I think I had started the thread about, you know, the discussion initially. I basically said something like, yo, I didn't listen to the show. What did you say? And I think he said something back to the effect of like, I'm not going to repeat myself.
Did he drop go listen to it on the podcast? You DW like the Blitz does?
Right. No. So he stopped responding. And I think I doubled down and I was like something basically to the effect of, yo, hello. Like, I'm talking to you. What's up? I thought we were talking.
That can't be it, though. I had to be more.
No. So then he retweeted me and he said, I said something to the effect, because I'm a lawyer and I don't know exactly what I said, but I said something like, yo, I don't need a cocky response. You know, I'm right. Genuinely interested in what you said because right. I didn't know you had a show. Sorry.
Right. You know? Sorry. You live in L.A.
Yeah, I live in L.A. I mean, yeah. I don't, you know, so sorry.
Not for Joel. That's
no,
that
no, and it's no disrespect. It's just,
you didn't mean it disrespectful.
I'm just a point blank guy.
It's but like, sometimes people can take things as disrespectful because you don't do tone. Like, tone doesn't always carry
I
on
always
Twitter.
Say this. I don't initiate. Sometimes
not
I,
for Joel.
Sometimes I do, but usually I don't initiate, but I will escalate. And so
you're a lawyer.
Right. And so I didn't like the fact that we were going back and forth.
And a rapper.
True.
I mean, yo, if we got issues, we'll
if
have issues.
If there's beef,
right?
You're the guy with the background.
That's what I'm saying. I'm very direct. So basically, I was curious to know because I know his background, and I was like, well, you know, what did you say? He didn't respond, and I said something to the effect of like, yo, I don't need a cocky. Oh, I think he did respond, and his response was basically like, yeah, like I said, whatever, go listen to it, or I'm not going to repeat myself or whatever. And so then that's when I said, yo, I don't need a cocky response. Just tell me what you said. The time you spent typing that cocky tweet, you could have just given me a very quick summary of what you said. And so he retweeted that, and he goes, no, this dude didn't need a cocky response to me giving you clarity as to where my comments were. I don't know you, and I don't owe you anything. I'm not going to type out my comments I verbalized over several shows. I have no problem responding to listeners/followers' specific questions. And so at that point, I was like, all right, homie, that's where we're going with this.
Did it get deeper than that?
We started going back and forth, and I got extremely disrespectful.
At least you admit it.
I mean, but that's what I'm saying. I want to initiate, but I will escalate. So if you want to do that and try to blast me, like, listen, and I don't even want to escalate because
No. Hey, listen.
Are you? Do you know you're a bad person? Not you, Roosh.
No,
Lance.
No, I'm not a bad person. I didn't know how all this went.
Yes, you
are. I feel
are.
Bad that he said he had.
We had.
To get
we've had a good time.
But that's what happens on Twitter too.
But we've had a good time. And you know Joel.
Tell
you know what he's
realest,
on.
Tell this is the realest show on the radio.
But here's the thing.
Sometime to our detriment.
Here's the thing. I'm the kind of guy, like you said, I don't care.
You if don't
I
hold saw a him grudge, right now, it's over. Grown people don't hold grudges.
If he were to walk in the room, I'd be like, yo, what's up? You remember that? We cool? We cool.
But you're know? Like, oh, you do
that's
have a show.
That's how Joel is, too.
If we're cool,
no,
we're
what?
Cool. Like,
no, he's not. That's the point. He's not that way. What are you doing?
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
You know he's
Joel's
not that
getting
way.
Better about not
is
holding
he?
On to stuff.
Yes.
All right. Yes.
And hey, to his credit, he probably feel some type of way because he used to work with the organization, has way more, you know, credit.
I think that is fair. When people accuse him of that, I would be salty if I were Joel, too, and if I felt like I were dismissed unceremoniously. I will also say this, though. As somebody who's known Joel for a while, I'm just telling y'all straight up. I talk to him about stuff that doesn't make it on the air. That dude has crazy amounts of information about things that have happened in the past, and I would say even currently. He has people in the building that he knows, and so Joel is very learned on a lot of that stuff.
And I doubt
that sounded
none of
like
that.
A lot of that just had to do with just
listen to my show. I mean, at the end of the day, if he look, when I interact on Twitter, I legitimately was curious because I know his background. So I was like, I wonder what info he's got.
Did you release a diss track at any point?
I didn't.
I just
okay,
know
good,
after
good.
This.
But I'm telling you, we went back and forth probably like we probably traded about 10 tweets very disrespectfully. And that's the end.
I don't know if Joel's listening because he's got to drive a place for a show. But I know who he will have a problem with now. And it won't be Roosh.
Joel knows I love him.
Well, look.
We all have to deal with uncomfortable stuff sometimes. I just had to deal with something uncomfortable.
Why did you have to?
Because you know what? When you get it out, it's just like a therapy, Dell.
Look,
when you get it out and the wound can heal. Do you cover a wound right away? No, you got to let it breathe.
I think I have a problem. The biggest problem I have with you is you're being disingenuous. Yeah, there's no therapy here.
You're the most disingenuous on the show.
But I'm pretty straightforward.
If Joel is listening,
he is.
It's all good, man. I'm not tripping. I am not tripping.
No, I know you're not. That's why I brought it up. I would have never brought it up if I would have thought he would have had a problem.
We know Roosh doesn't care. It's not about what Roosh cares about. It's what Joel cares about. You know.
Are we wrapping up No Astros?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. See what you did?
Dang it.
See what you did?
What about the Astros?
Nah, it's too late. Charlie's up next.
We'll zip it in. I mean, do you think they could win it all? I think they could win it all.
Yeah.
They're 14-1 when Altuve homers. They're
14-1 when he homers?
My unofficial count. He's got 16 homers twice in one game the other night, and the only one they lost was that crazy one to the Red Sox.
They got what is it right now, the record with multi-home run games in a
row? They're tied with the Orioles for 10 in a row.
10 in a row.
Trying to make it 11 tonight?
I think we'll squeeze some thoughts in, man. If they could get this piggyback thing working, especially in the playoffs, Odorizzi out the pen, piggybacking Christian Javier, maybe Luis Garcia.
Man, dude, can you imagine how deep that would be? Three piggyback starters?
You use this segment to piss off Joel. Now, Charlie, congratulations to you, Lance.
What am I doing with Charlie?
It's already 10:59.
Oh, because he doesn't mind us shaving a couple minutes off his show?
I don't know. He might want to talk Astros. Maybe.
And he'll get to. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, everybody.
ESPN 97.5.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year, and we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
Did you know that over 80% of companies in America, each generating more than $100 million in revenue, don't show up on public stock exchanges? They're private and are largely not an option for 401k investors. But now there's a chance for everyday American savers to opt in for access through the 401k plan if they choose to. Regardless of how you're building for the future, you deserve the same opportunities because you've earned the right to more. Learn more by visiting retiresafer.org. Paid for by the Council for a Safe and Secure Retirement.